What is going on? You've tuned into the MMA Podcast, the 215th edition of the MMA Podcast. It is December 15th. We got a fun Fox card this weekend, a lot to break down. Joined as always by the co-host with the most, Sweet Pappy Jones. Pat, what's going on, dude?
Jake, living large, Walters. We are just chilling. It's a fabulous Friday here in Southern California. You could not ask for better weather. Couldn't ask for a better fight lineup. I already had a little bit of action today. Got some even more spectacular action coming up for Saturday, the UFC on Fox card. Fun times, man.
Yeah, we did not do a show last week, so I did. We do briefly have a few fights to talk about. UFC 218, we had Max with his first title defense at 145, performance by Francis Ngannou. I guess let's get into that now. We'll dive straight into it. No lollygagging like we normally do. Let's jump straight into it. UFC 218, that was a couple weeks ago. Don't want to linger too long on it because it was a while ago. But I did briefly want to touch on it. Good performances by Eddie Alvarez, Henry Cejudo, Francis Ngannou, Max Holloway. I want to talk about that Alvarez-Gaethje fight first, ending by a knee in the third round. 4 minutes in, Justin Gaethje takes his first professional loss. Eddie Alvarez back in the win column, wins that violence What was it called? The all violence belt or the all violence title? Whatever they were marketing it as. Yeah,
fighter championship. Yeah,
it was a great fight. Both dudes went to war. Both dudes very bloodied up. Eddie Alvarez looked like he had a baseball in his cheek when the fight was over. Could barely talk. Back and forth war. I would love to see that fight put on. You know, I know it doesn't make sense, and Eddie definitely should move up from here. But I, you know, just as an MMA fan, I say let's make that fight three times a year and put it on a card over and over and over, because they, you know, you have so many fights where both guys are bangers. Remember everyone was super pumped up over Jake Ellenberger versus Rory McDonald. Fights like that where it's like, oh, this is going to be so much violence. And the guys just have a glorified sparring match as Chris ex-podcast host and still a very good friend of the show would used to call him. Yeah, you know, you see so many
shout
fights
out
that,
to CeeLo.
Shout outs. You know, you see these fights that have such a big build-up, and they don't live up to it. This one really lived up to the violence that was promised, which was a lot of fun. What do you think's next for Eddie? I'm hearing talk that he might get a rematch against Dustin Poirier, which I like the idea of a lot. I thought, you know, whichever way you look at it, that should have been a DQ loss for Eddie Alvarez, whether it was intentional or not. That last strike was obviously illegal and obviously the one that ended the fight. I don't know why that's not being called a disqualification. But Dustin, man, Dustin is a name at lightweight that you don't hear about a lot. But he has really, I mean, since losing to Conor, he has put forth some amazing fights. And, I mean, if you told me he fought for the title in 2018, I wouldn't be shocked. He is an amazing fighter, especially, you know, since bumping up from 45. He's looked great, and I want to see Eddie versus Dustin, too. What did you make of that all-violence championship?
Well, it certainly lived up to the billing. These guys, they put on a great war. It had all the stylistic matchings to make this fight what it was. And they neither one, I don't recall if either guy shooting for a takedown. It was just pure stand-up mayhem. Both guys just rocking each other, and Alvarez, really, to my recollection, seemed to be getting the better of it from the jump. Seemed to be just a one step ahead for the duration of the contest, at least, yeah, again, to my recollection, from the first through the third. Of course, Gaethje was getting his in. He landed a lot of good shots, did some good work with the leg kicks, and also touched him up lumped him up with that hematoma on his jaw there. Great fight, but Eddie Alvarez with that knee at the end, fantastic. Great stoppage. Certainly lived up to the billing of the winner being the most violent fighter in the sport. You could definitely make that case for Alvarez. He's never been known to be one of those guys where, you know, oh man, you know, Alvarez fight's coming on. That's a bathroom break fight. He's never been that guy. It's always, he's always been one to watch no matter what promotion he's been in. He's always been putting on wars. So, it was a fantastic showing for him. And, I'd like to see that Poirier rematch. I think just about everybody does. I'm sure Eddie Alvarez is looking forward beyond that, but, that was very, very sketchy one there. So I think everybody wants to see that one ran back, and that's certainly a marketable one as well. Dustin Poirier, similarly, one of those guys, never been in a boring fight himself. Lots of finishes. So yeah, let's have them give that one another go.
Moving up the card, Henry Cejudo, a pretty dominant performance over Sergio Pettis. I think a lot of us expected that coming. So now you have Cejudo versus Benavidez, or Cejudo and Benavidez at the top of the division, looking up at the current champion, Mighty Mouse. I guess everything kind of for Cejudo and Benavidez is dependent on what's next for DJ, whether he stays at flyweight and defends his belt more, or moves up to bantamweight or a catchweight, or TJ Dillashaw comes down. I guess it kind of depends on that. That's kind of what everyone's calling for. If Mighty Mouse leaves the division, I say let's do an interim belt fight. You know, if you're handing interim belts out like candy, which I'm not the biggest fan of, but if you're doing it, let's do it at flyweight just so we see a little bit of change at that, you know, as far as belts at flyweight go, because we've only ever seen one male champion at flyweight now. And if you're handing out those interim belts, let's do Cejudo Benavidez for an interim if Mighty Mouse leaves. If he doesn't, if I'm giving it to one or the other, I think it's Benavidez. I think even though he's already fought Mighty Mouse twice, I think he's on like a 6-fight win streak. I mean, one of the most underrated guys. You barely hear his name mentioned, but he literally beats the shit out of everyone not named Demetrius Johnson or Dominic Cruz. It's crazy. But, I think this definitely puts Cejudo up in that rarefied air with Joe B.
Yeah, I'd definitely be inclined to agree with you there, Jake. It was a fantastic showing from Cejudo. And, you know, speaking of Joe B as well, their fight, Cejudo and Joseph Benavidez, that was a very closely contested fight. And I know a lot of people really saw that fight for Cejudo. The judges gave it to Benavidez, so you can certainly run that one back. That would make for a great interim title fight if Demetrius was to move up to 135, or I suppose even if Dillashaw was to move down to 125, and it'd be a champion versus champion matchup there for the belt, or if, you know, Mighty Mouse is just sidelined for a little bit going up to bantamweight. But Benavidez and Cejudo certainly showing a lot of good things, overcoming Sergio Pettis. You know, Sergio being one of the craftiest strikers at 125, a fighter who's really come into his own and matured himself as of late, and Cejudo was able to pass a tough test there, beat the young up-and-comer. I mean, Cejudo, not that he's so long in the tooth himself. I mean, just barely 30 years old. But it was a great showing. And, yeah, I think it's Demetrius Johnson, Joseph Benavidez, Henry Cejudo. And Demetrius is clearly at the top. And then, you know, Joe B and Cejudo, they could be interchanging for, you know, 1A and 1B in the division. And, another matchup for them would be good, and I'm sure Joe B would like to get that one back anyways. So, and the timing might work out with that rather nicely, with Benavidez healing up his injury. Maybe clear to come back in a couple months here, so that might just be the matchup to make.
Co-main event, Francis Ngannou wowing the world with an incredible knockout. over Alistair Overeem, just kind of threw that uppercut right up the pipe, and Overeem left his head right there. The way his head snapped back, it looked like some shit out of Tekken. Great KO for Francis Ngannou, who, like we said on the last podcast, it was a rumor that Cormier Volkan was going to be the co-main, and Stipe versus the winner of Ngannou Overeem was going to be the main event. Since then, the rumblings I heard have been confirmed. You have now Francis Ngannou taking on Stipe Miocic at UFC 220 at the end of January. That's going to be a hell of a fight. I'll let you lead on this one, because I might have an unpopular opinion about Francis. But yeah, what did you make of this heavyweight clash? And obviously now you have Francis on a pretty quick turnaround, fighting in two consecutive calendar months, the beginning of December 2017 and now the end of January 2018, where he will be fighting for the belt against Stipe, who's on an impressive run of his own.
You know, I thought it was a great fight. Ngannou was able to uncork this uppercut just from the depths of hell. He came up like a Street Fighter Shoryuken Dragon Punch, and was able to just, well, thank goodness he didn't, but he damn near took Overeem's head off. He was down unconscious for a couple minutes after that. And, you know, it was good to see him coming back. Good to see Overeem okay. He's been through quite a few wars in his day, and he was down for the count for quite some time after that. But thankfully, he was okay. The Predator, man, he was able to get it done, able to beat the K1 Grand Prix champion, the former heavyweight champion of just about every division or every promotion, with the exception of the UFC. So he's finally beaten those top tier names. I was wrong. I thought Overeem might get the job done in that fight. I want to say I called for the ream even to upset Ngannou in that fight. Did not happen. Ngannou just showing what a scary human being he is. And really, it's I think, Jake, you might have mentioned it on our last podcast, Ngannou building up that kind of Shane Carwin-esque mystique, you know, where he's just knocking everybody out in the first round and no one's really looking like they've got anything for him. And then, you know, he's got to get to Brock Lesnar, who was the champ at the time, who's destroying everybody and, you know, was looking indestructible himself. But, you know, is Stipe the Brock Lesnar to Francis Ngannou, Shane Carwin? I don't know. I mean, Shane, and maybe that's what has made Stipe such a great heavyweight champion. He's kind of almost low-key just that killer. You know, you don't even look at it, you know, when you see him. He just seems like an affable guy. Sure, 6'4", rather large and imposing, but, you know, he's got that, you know, it's not a Verdum, you know, creepy Joker face kind of smile thing. He seems like an affable guy. You know, he doesn't seem like the kind of guy that would just absolutely pound you into oblivion in spite of his body of work inside the octagon. So, you know, I don't know. Does he have that mystique? Maybe not, but maybe that makes him more dangerous. I don't know. This is going to be a crazy fight. Ngannou shot, just doing work versus Overeem. I don't know. It's going to be an epic showdown for that heavyweight belt here.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to take anything away from Francis, and that I think he deserves the shot. He's a breath of fresh air in the heavyweight division, which is awesome. You know, it seems like heavyweight in 265, the one thing that we've seen in every other weight class, and we haven't there, are new faces. It's like, you know, we have this old guard of Fabricio Verdum and Alistair Overeem and Mark Hunt and all these guys where, you know, it's guys who have been around a long time. So it's a breath of fresh air, which I like. The knockout was amazing. He deserves the shot. But I think everyone's kind of getting ahead of themselves with the whole Francis Ngannou's a killer. Oh my God, this is the future of the UFC. He's gonna kill Stipe. Holy shit! Like I have seen people on Twitter being like, "Oh man, if I was Stipe, I'd be so fucking nervous." Holy shit! It's like, let's not forget the run that Stipe Miocic is on right now. 5 straight knockouts or TKOs. The last 4 of them all being in the first round. And check out this murderer's row. Mark Hunt, Andrei Arlovsky, Fabricio Werdum, Alistair Overeem, Junior Dos Santos. That's right, Francis wasn't the only person to knock Alistair out in the first round. And speaking of Alistair Overeem getting knocked out, again, not trying to take away from Ngannou, but since 2013, Alistair Overeem has been knocked out by Bigfoot Silva. He's been knocked out by Travis Brown. He's been knocked out by Ben Rothwell. He's been knocked out by Stipe Miocic. And now he's been knocked out by Francis Ngannou. So, and 4 of those were in the first round. I mean, you know, it's, yes, Francis, I guess, did it quicker than all of them. But, I don't know, he only did it 30 seconds quicker than Ben Rothwell did it. You don't really hear that much about guys like Bigfoot or Ben Rothwell too much these days. But, you know, like I said, I'm not trying to say he doesn't deserve the shot. I'm not even saying he, you know, doesn't have a chance. He is for sure he has the skill set that could knock anyone flat on their ass. But for all these people just ambling on board the Francis Ngannou hype wagon, it's like let's kind of pump our brakes a little bit. Let's realize that, you know, I mean, right now, Francis Ngannou is the favorite in Vegas. Francis is minus 160. Stipe is plus 140. I think that is fucking insane. That is absolutely ridiculous. You have Stipe Miocic, who has proven his worth, who has been fighting in the UFC since 2011 and is 11-2 in those fights. The only losses being, let's be honest, a fluke loss against Stefan Struve way back when he was green as fuck, and a decision loss against Junior Dos Santos that a lot of people think he won, and he avenged. So Stipe Miocic is having almost a George St. Pierre, like, wow, I never drew that comparison, but if you really think about it, you know, GSP had that one loss when he was green to Matt Hughes, and then he had the other loss a little later, like George had to Sarah, which he avenged, like George did with Sarah. Stipe is on a hell of a run. I think, you know, he's going for his 3rd title defense now, which would be, you know, be the record. There's kind of a curse there. There have been a lot of UFC heavyweight champions to defend the belt 2 times and then have it taken from them. But yeah, Stipe is, I mean, he is himself a monster. And like I said, I don't want to take anything away from Francis after putting forth a brilliant performance, but let's pump the brakes on sleeping on Stipe Miocic, people. My God. That's really all I had on that fight. If you have anything else to add, brings us to Holloway versus Aldo, which kind of made you think about the last fight. It was similar in a lot of ways with Aldo kind of leading early, and then Holloway just taking the fight away from Aldo as it went on. Ends the fight in the 3rd round. Did he end it in the 3rd round the first time too? Wasn't it like I'm looking now? Yeah,
it was the 3rd round,
and it was wow. And both fights, it was within a it was in the last minute of the 3rd round. Crazy. But, yeah, you know, I think both fights were convincing. Neither one begs for a rematch. Aldo, you know, again, I don't want to take anything away from him because he really is one of the greatest ever. But it looks like the torch has now officially really been passed at featherweight from Jose Aldo to Max Holloway, and we got a dangerous champ on our hands.
Yeah, that we sure do. Certainly nothing flukish about the first fight between the two, and nothing at all flukish about the second. These were clean, decisive victories for Max. Both very hard-fought fights against Jose Aldo, who looked to be really in top shape in both of their matchups, especially this last one. I mean, Jose was fighting hard. He was fighting like he was a fresh fighter, not like it was the short notice replacement. You know, it wasn't the shortest of notice, but, you know, Jose Aldo was not the first opponent scheduled for Max Holloway, so not a full championship camp for Jose Aldo necessarily, but, man, he came out there guns blazing, just as good as an effort as he put up in the first fight, if not a better one in the second. But Holloway, my goodness, just the range, the diversity of his skills, you know, the striking, the grappling. He's really just putting everything together. He's kind of, dare I say, like 145-pound Dominic Cruz, you know, just a little taller. The movement, just a little more awkward.
Yeah, he's got a little more, yeah, I can see that.
I mean, a little more pop on it, you know, or TJ Dillashaw, whoever you want to say. But, you know, good ground game. He's a threat everywhere. And his range and his reach, I mean, it's he puts it all together so well. And he's a tough guy. I want to say, aside from Nate Diaz, Max Holloway is the only person to go the distance with Conor McGregor in the UFC. So he's got a hell of a chin on him as well. He took a couple in that fight from Conor McGregor. But, yeah, he made an emphatic statement, really re-solidifying his spot as the undisputed 145-pound champion. And, man, talk about someone who's looking ready for all comers, Jake.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, we assume that Frankie Edgar is next in line for him. It sounds like he is good, and that kind of gives us a good transition to the featherweight division. A week later, we had Brian Ortega and Cub Swanson going at it on a pretty fun card. You hated to see friend of the show Aljamain Sterling get kneed brutally by Marlon Moraes on the main card. But he's tweeted since, seems to be in good health and good spirits, and the guy's young as hell. I mean, you know, even after a tough loss like that, he's still one of the younger guys in the division, and he will be back. And I stick to my prediction that he one day will hold up the belt. But let's get to that main event. Brian Ortega doing what he does best, choking fools out in Fresno, Cali at the Save Mart Center. Another win for Brian Ortega, and this puts him squarely right behind Frankie Edgar. Once we have Edgar fight Holloway, it seems Brian Ortega seems willing to wait and take on the winner of that title fight. And, man, as good as both guys are, Brian Ortega looking scary. It looks like his fights aren't perfect. I forget who was saying it, but he loses a lot of rounds. You know, he's not a guy who marches in there and wins every round. But regardless of whether he's behind on the scorecard or what, once he gets a hold of you, you're going to be tapping or going to sleep very soon. He's got some of the slickest jiu-jitsu we've ever seen out of an American fighter. I mean, really, usually these top level guys are Brazilian, and Brian Ortega is showing off a mastery of jiu-jitsu like we've never seen at 145. So, very, you know, and he and Max are both really big, too. I know Max will be the favorite, so that'll be an interesting matchup. Max, obviously known for his stand-up, not necessarily being like a knockout king, but just having such slick footwork and movement. You mentioned the comparison to Dominic Cruz a minute ago. That would be a very interesting fight between Ortega and Holloway. But in the post-fight interview, Ortega was very, very humble, mentioned his charity. The guy's a very, very awesome human as far as it goes from just, you know, being a part of his community and giving back and all that. And he was very humble in his post-fight speech, too, being the first to admit that he didn't want to fight Frankie or leapfrog Frankie, that he understood Frankie was next in line to fight Max, and that once they sorted it all out, that he believes he's next in line and is willing to wait, like I said. So good performance by Brian Ortega, a young T-City, the man only 26 years old in San Pedro, L.A., but the man is making a name for himself. Was that racist saying San Pedro?
maybe just slightly, I don't know. It's it's okay. You know, you're trying to be authentic, Jake. Hey, I wouldn't say that. I'd say that's authentic, you know. In T-City, that win streak, that is authentic. He has he's had no problems in the 145 pound weight class. I mean, he's had a couple. I mean, I shouldn't be so quick to say that. I mean, he is undefeated, but he has had some adversity in his fights.
His whole career has been a win streak.
Yeah, exactly. With a no contest sandwich in between there, but really, he has just found a way to win in every single fight. Cub Swanson, bless him, hometown boy. He's still done good. Still done good in that main event. You know, he was putting it on Ortega. He hit him with some big bombs. And Ortega, he just did not flinch. And, you know, Cub, he's a heavy hitter for the 145-pound weight class. He's, you know, training with some of the local boxers out here, some of the best. And he, you know, he's finished many a person inside the 145-pound weight class in the UFC. And Brian Ortega just not flinching. That kid has a heck of a chin on him, and he was able to get it to the mat where he's best and get the sub on Swanson. It was a good showing on him. You know, Cub had a lot of momentum going into this fight. He'd really been doing well, and, you know, Brian Ortega, he was able to overcome the crafty veteran, and, you know, he's quickly ascending that ladder, Jake. I mean, gosh, he's maybe got one fight. If he's not fighting Max Holloway for the championship, I mean, who do you give him in the meantime? I mean, assuming Holloway and Edgar get matched up, that happening maybe sometime March or April, you know, does Brian Ortega even have a fight in between now and then? Or, you know, who would he match him up with? Are you kind of killing off prospects if they both match up? I mean, I don't know. He's got to get that title shot soon. He's right there.
Saying he wants to wait, we'll see. It's been a strategy that's worked for some, hasn't worked for others. I like how I worded that like I was a fucking anchor on the NBC News. Thank you, P-Money. We will see how that goes. You know, that strategy of taking time off and waiting for a title shot has worked for some, and it hasn't worked for others. Now we move on to the news. It actually goes well now to, I don't have the playlist up, fuck it, the news. The one thing I want to talk about, GSP relinquishing the belt, very mixed emotions on this, very kind of bittersweet, whatever the word I'm thinking of is. You know, it's like I think GSP was, and so I mean, GSP being able to skip the line was a little fucked up to begin with, because you already have somewhat of a logjam at middleweight where you have Whitaker, who just beat Yoel to get the interim belt. You have Rockhold, who's waiting in line, just beat Branch. You have Gastelum, but Gastelum just lost to Weidman, even though he just beat Bisping after he lost the belt to GSP. GSP kind of threw a monkey wrench into everything. And I think that to most people who at least have knowledge of the situation, they could probably see it for what it was. You know, Michael Bisping was a much easier fight, both stylistically and overall, for GSP than, say, a Tyron Woodley was. If Woodley was the champion at middleweight and Bisping was the champion at welterweight, I think George still probably would have fought Michael Bisping. I think he was a little selective there, and, you know, I think he saw it for what it was, which Michael Bisping, as, you know, as storied a career as he has, and he definitely earned that fight against Rockhold. You know, he earned the belt and got that KO. I don't think he is, you know, I don't think he's the best middleweight in the world. I think GSP probably saw it for what it was and saw it as a winnable fight. And, you know, it's hard to blame him for that, but, you know, it makes you wonder, did he really have any intent to defend the belt? I mean, it kind of sucks that you're going to fight for a belt and hold up the division and make everyone wait on you to fight for a championship when you had no intention to defend the belt whatsoever. You just kind of wanted it as a little money boost or ego boost. Hey, I beat Michael Bisping and now I'm a multi-division champion, and now I'm just going to give it up because I really had no intention to defend it. Only George really knows what his intention was. And of course, if his intention was to never defend it, he would never admit that, because, you know, it would sound horrible for the reasons I just gave. So the story out of GSP's camp is he has colitis, which I don't doubt that. If you're using a medical reason, I'm sure he's dealing with that. You know, all fighters are dealing with something. Everyone's got some shit they got to deal with. And GSP seems to be this serious, I guess, a gut condition or something. So GSP is relinquishing the belt. One thing I will give him a lot of credit for, which is awesome, at least he hasn't just sat on the belt and done nothing, pulled a Conor, who has now successfully sat on his belt for an entire calendar year, the whole year of 2017, the lightweight belt belonged to a boxer, which is a whole nother story. But yeah, George, the one credit you have to give him through all of this, he made his choice quickly, swiftly. He didn't sit on the title and kind of go back and forth like Woodley's doing with the whole, do I want to get my shoulder worked on? Yes, no, I can't choose. GSP, I think he's now has the shortest title reign ever at middleweight. It was like 38 days. Gave it up. You now officially have Rockhold and Whitaker fighting each other. The card they're going to be fighting at is, I believe, UFC 221, February 10th. Robert Whitaker, a favorite, a minus 170 right now. I think that line's pretty accurate. Rockhold, definitely a live dog there, has a chance of plus 150, but Whitaker should be, I think, the favorite. Because if Michael Bisping could knock you out, Luke, Robert Whitaker sure as fuck can knock you out. But, yeah, that'll be a fun fight. GSP now, I guess, he'll be on the rack for the next 6 months before we even find out if he'll even fight again, which I think he will. But no longer the champ at middleweight. Your new undisputed champion is Robert Whittaker. He was moved up. So I feel like everything, as crazy as the whole Bisping and GSP thing was, everything is right again at 185. Everything is as it should be. Robert Whittaker should have been the undisputed champion for beating Yoel Romero, and now he is. And he will be defending his title against Luke Rockhold, who I believe has earned the shot. You know, other names there. You have Chris Weidman, who's not able to fight now. He's injured. You have Kelvin Gastelum. Had he beat Chris Weidman, I think, would be next in line, but he didn't. Weidman finished him, so I don't think he deserves a shot just by beating Bisping. He is up there, but talking about Kelvin Gastelum, I heard a rumor that he was offered a fight, the rumor came from Malki Kawa, who is Yoel's manager, so you got to take that with a grain of salt. But the rumor was that Kelvin Gastelum turned down a fight to fight Yoel Romero, which I mean, as much as I want to see that fight, if Kelvin wants to stay at middleweight, I feel like he should take that fight. But he did express after the Chris Weidman fight that he wanted to move back down to welterweight. And, you know, he did take the fight against Anderson Silva after that. Maybe he just took it because he thought it would be a good fight for his career, you know, against one of the greatest of all time, was a winnable fight. I don't know if that's why he took it. But if he does, you know, he is at a spot now where he needs to decide long term, am I going to get serious and go after a belt at 170? In which case, turning down a fight against Romero, I think, is smart. But if he does want to stay at 85 and end up making his run there, you know, I think he should fight Romero, which was a tangent I was on talking about the current fight, which we have, which is Whitaker Rockhold, now that GSP has vacated the title. What do you think about GSP's relinquishing of the title? And of course, now you have UFC 221, Rockhold Whitaker for the undisputed belt.
Well, if you are to believe Dana White's last statement, he says he knew the whole time GSP was not going to defend the belt, and you know they had the language in the contract.
A
This
lot of
and
us
the
had
other.
that feeling.
A lot of us did. I'm one of those people. I did not think that this was. Yeah,
I
I
did
thought
too.
he would come in. I mean, this was the money grab. You know, this was the easiest chance to pad your legacy that GSP could see. You know, I mean, be it, it was you know, it wasn't the easiest fight for him. I mean, he got a couple cuts and was bloodied up quite a bit in the process. He had to work for it. But yeah, I think we all had a feeling that this was exactly how it was going to play it out. Quite frankly, if you didn't think that this was going to how this was going to play out, I'm kind of wondering where your head's at. You got to wake up here. This is the GSP cash grab, and it worked perfectly for him. You know, I can't fault him whatsoever. You know, who amongst us could? I mean, why would you not? You know, you can come in, you get to be on the very short list of multi-division champs in the UFC. You're already in. You know, you're already on the short list for all-time greatest in the sport, pound for pound, blah, 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 blah. This only helps that. You know, Anderson Silva didn't have championship belts in two weight classes. So, you know, all good things for him. And you know he made some good coin off of that fight as well. So just a win all the way around. Really no losses from GSP. Or, you know, that was an all-win situation. And he capitalized on it. Can't fault him for that. Yeah, glad he actually gave up the title rather quickly. Didn't draw it out. You know, said, "Hey, you know what? I'm not going to defend this 185. I got to bulk up too much. You know, the colitis, it's flaring up. You know, I got to eat too much to maintain this mass." And you know, so good for him. He didn't stall out the division so much. You know, at least, you know, more than he could have. He didn't pull a Conor McGregor and say, "Oh, well, you know, maybe I'll go to 170, maybe I'll go to 185, maybe I'll go to 205, you know, and just kind of, he just got in, got out, got the money. God bless you. And Whitaker Rockhold, man, that is going to be a nasty fight. Talk about violent fights, a couple violent guys who are never in boring fights. Oh, my goodness. Whitaker and Rockhold, they come swinging them things. Rockhold, he's got the great ground game. Bobby Knuckles, though, he says, "I don't give a fuck about the ground game," because he has just been stopping everybody from taking him down, from Jacare to Yoel Romero, two of the absolute scariest grapplers that have ever been in the UFC. Bobby Knuckles shutting them down, saying, "Get your shit out of here," and sending them out. Jacare a little more emphatically than Yoel, but he's getting the job done. He's beating up everybody right now. Rockhold, though, dangerous. He's like a viper. He's like a cobra. You know, he's got that length, a lot of length in the 185-pound division. You know, the leg kicks. I'm visioning a liver shot. You know, he's got that length, Jake. You know, so he can get you. He's very crafty with the subs. Certainly very live in this one. Rockhold has only faltered to the the highest level of competition, and I do recall that he was knocked out by Michael Bisping. This is going to be a great fight. Can't wait to see how that one plays out. I'll have to analyze the tape a little more closely as we get closer to fight date here for that one. But very exciting. I like the division moving along now.
For sure, it definitely feels like everything is right where it should be at 185 again with Whitaker as champ. There really wasn't a lot of news. There was some little boy getting bullied on Twitter, and all the fighters and Dana using him as a cheap vehicle to promote themselves and make themselves look good.
Yeah, and then is the family racist?
Yeah, is the family racist? Is the mom?
Whose Twitter account is that? Is it whose Instagram is that?
Running the GoFundMe? It was all a shit show, and I was skeptical from the jump, cocksuckers. What else do
save
we
have? Save your shekels.
We had a Bellator today that went on a little earlier. Valerie Letourneau and Michael McDonald, a couple former UFC fighters over in Bellator doing work. I noticed Michael McDonald didn't make weight, and you were coming through with some hot takes of your own there on Twitter. Some clowns were chirping you. What all was going down there?
Oh my goodness! Well, stories all this time, you know, you come with that truth, and come shaming people with the truth. A lot of haters and whiners and crybabies start coming out of the woodwork. I simply make a comment, and now I'd like to preface this by saying, Michael McDonald. And if you go back and listen to this podcast or any of the other podcasts I've done, I want to say I might have even potentially interviewed Michael McDonald. Way back in the day, maybe on the MMA Mental days. Shout out to Ray.
MMA Mental.
You okay, Jake? You know, we might have even had an interview before, and always liked him. Entertaining fighter, seemed like a nice enough gent, stand up kind of guy, personable on the mic. All that good stuff, and making his Bellator debut, headlining this week. Actually, you know, was today, and. Earlier in the week, this article came out, and it was like, oh, you know, I don't feel like I really have to, you know. It started with the UFC uses the bonus system like a gun to people's heads. I want to say I read this article on MMA Junkie, unfortunately. The UFC uses a bonus system like guns to people's heads. I don't feel like, you know, Bellator recognizes my talent. I don't feel like I have to, you know, I'm under pressure to come in here, perform for them. Like, they know I'm a good hire. You know, I feel, you know, I don't have to prove my worth, like, blah, 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 blah. Stuff to that effect. And then had even another part that said, oh, you know, I'm swallowing a little bit of my competitive pride to come here, but, you know, this is a business. I've got to think of this as a business, blah, blah, blah. Which, you know, you're basically saying, yeah, the best guys are in the UFC. I'm in this for a paycheck, which, hey, is certainly not a, you know, we all know what's going on, Mike. I mean, for sure. But you gotta word this a little better now. You know, at least give us the, oh, Bellator has a lot of top-notch competition, or, you know, something to that effect. But that came off very, very backhanded to his new employer. You know, a lot of backhanded compliments, if you will. And, you know, which was all very out of character for Michael McDonald. I'd never seen him come off like that before in an interview. And then misses weight for his Bellator debut in the main event. And so I, you know, made a little comment saying, man, that, you know, that's a really, just a really bad PR week for Michael McDonald, you know. And that's kind of instant karma, right? You know, you go out there saying, oh, I don't have to prove myself, I don't have to perform for anybody, and then you go out there and you miss weight and you have egg all over your face in your promotional debut for your new employer. Not the best look. And you know, some of his one of his buddies had taken exception to my to my simply pointing out the facts, the instant karma, the cause and effect here. And hey, you know what though? Michael McDonald, in spite of the idiots that he apparently has hanging around him, and his missed weight, you know, Bellator decided not to take money from him, so that makes it okay. But be that as it may,
it's the plane's fault.
It's the plane's fault, bro. You know, it's the whole airport's fault. You know, it's the entire airport's fault that he didn't make weight. So, you know, Bellator didn't take his money. That also makes it okay. So we're good. You know, he won his fight. No harm, no foul. You know, I've certainly got no beef with Mayday in spite of the idiots that seem to be in his camp or surrounding him. But, you know, God bless him and all of his cronies there, you know, coming through doing good. And, you know, the UFC really filling Bellator up as of late with some ranked competition. It's almost maybe potentially turning into a legit, I don't want to say competition for the UFC, but a legit second promotion here.
Yeah, you know, and I think what's best for the sport, where you really see the sport grow, is when there is competition. You know, they say the best era of pro wrestling was when the WWE had competition from Ted Turner, and I feel like, you know,
Monday Night Wars, some
of the best eras of mixed martial arts have been when Strikeforce was around, and Strikeforce was putting out fights with Fedor and Ronda and like Nick Diaz versus Paul Daly, all of those fights. And then you saw the Strikeforce fighters come over and have a lot of success. Guys like Luke Rockhold, Daniel Cormier. And way back before I was even a fan of the sport, I wish I was, because I hear many, many old timers speak very, very nostalgically of it. But back in the Pride days, you know, when you had Fedor and Rampage and Vanderlei and Crow Cop and all the classics over there, and I've gone back and watched it, and you know, that truly, I'm sure, must have been a great time to be a fan. But you know, if you really are a fan of the sport, you're not a fan of the UFC. If you know, I just want to see the sport thrive as much as possible. And that doesn't mean having the same interests as someone who's a stockholder at, you know, WMG and IMG and whoever the fuck owns it now. You know, it's I really think what's best is competition. And it's interesting now because you have situations where like Rory McDonald going to be fighting for the belt over in Bellator against Douglas Lima. If Rory McDonald becomes their champion, well, Rory McDonald's your Bellator welterweight champion, and Tyron Woodley is your UFC welterweight champion. Have they ever fought before? Oh, they have. What happened? Oh, Rory beat the fuck out of him. Like, I think that's a much closer fight these days. But the more competition we see, I think the better. And I'm pumped for this heavyweight Grand Prix they have coming up. I don't know if we really spoke on that last episode, but their little 8-man tourney that they're doing, kicking off in January, that'll be a lot of fun to break down as it grows nearer and nearer. But yeah, fuck Michael McDonald's cronies. You know, it's so funny. You have people who are like loosely related to fighters. You know, they like roll with them once or twice, or they lift in the same gym, and all of a sudden they think they're hot shit and are basically their like corner men. I was with a group who almost got in a fight, an actual fist fight at UFC 167 with a guy who was like a AMI fighter and just like chirping everyone. And I won't go into specifics because frankly, it's not, I think I've told it before, but, yeah, fun times there. We'll save it for another show, maybe, if I haven't. But let's move on. We've been talking about the past, and we have yet to get into the main topic of tonight's show, which is, of course, this UFC on Fox card this coming Saturday tomorrow. and going down in Winnipeg, and between the main event we got between Robbie Lawler and Rafael Dos Anjos. Gonna be a war. The prelims look fun. A lot of familiar names. Jordan Mee and Eric Silva on the UFC Fight Pass. Alawale Bambagossi. You got John McDessie versus Abel Trujillo. That's an underrated fight. Both of those guys throw heavy as hell. You got Chad Laprise, the up-and-coming Canadian, fighting. Your prelim main event is Jan Błachowicz versus Jared Cannonier. That's going to be fun. But let's focus on the main card. Let's break down these fights in the main card. Your first couple fights, you got Glover Teixeira versus Misha Cirkunov, Santiago Ponzinibbio and Mike Perry, Ricardo Lamas versus Josh Emmett. What do you make of these fights? I guess your betting favorites are Ricardo Lamas, Ponzinibbio and Cirkunov. But which way are you leaning for these ones?
Well, you know what? It's hard to argue with Vegas. They're normally doing a pretty good job. Cirkunov, I want to say, has looked a little bit better as of late. Man, Ponzinibbio versus Perry—that's a tough one right there. I mean, really, I think again, Vegas—they're normally right. Cirkunov, I think he's a little fresher than Teixeira. Teixeira. You know, he's been through the ringer fighting the top guys at light heavyweight at 205. You know, usually doing a pretty good job over there, but I think Cirkunov is just a little bit fresher. I think he's got the skills to get it done in this one. And you know, as far as Ponzinibbio versus Perry, Ponzinibbio just a bit bigger, a bit rangier, I want to say. That length, you know, that could either help or hurt him against Mike Perry. That could help him to reach out and touch him a little sooner. But if he misses and Perry's able to get in, close the distance, he's got some hard shots. So he certainly wants to use that length and be sure to land, because if he misses too long, Perry will be there for some tough blows. But Ponzinibbio also has a very solid ground game. Close fight. I could see why Vegas would be siding with Ponzinibbio in that one, though. And Ricardo Lamas versus Josh Emmett. I mean, Ricardo Lamas has been one of the top 145 pounders since the UFC has instilled the division. Speaking of bygone eras, many of us will even remember him from the WEC era. True scrapper. And yeah, Josh Emmett, tough kid. He's my age, 32 years old, but, you know, not as heralded as Ricardo Lamas is. Only four fights into his UFC career, but, he's 3-1, with his only loss being a split decision. So, and just recently having won against Felipe Ranch, he's got momentum back on his side here. But I mean, when you're going up against Lamas is a guy, he's only lost to the likes of, you know, your Jose Aldos, Chad Mendes, Max Holloway. It's very rare, since he's been in the UFC, those are his only losses, you know, to just the top tier fighters. So, and Ricardo Lamas, I mean, he's got a full skill set himself. Great with the strikes, the wrestling, the submissions. Hard not to go with him in just about any bout he's in.
Yeah. Those. It is very difficult to pick against Lamas, and is, you know, I do want to buy into the Josh Emmett hype train, because I think the guy has an incredible work ethic. If he can make it to 45 long term, I know he's been at lightweight his whole career and was unable to make featherweight. The fight's going to be at a catchweight, 148.5, and Emmett will give up a portion of his purse. I want to jump on the Josh Emmett hype train, But I gotta see him win this fight first, because Ricardo Lamas, like you mentioned, only loses to the best of the best of the best. And Josh Emmett is not yet in that atmosphere yet. Mike Perry versus Santiago Ponzinibbio. I love Perry, just because not enough fighters play the role of the heel. Every fighter just wants to be, yeah, you know, I really want to step in there, and I want to show the world that I'm a good fighter, and I respect my opponent, and I respect everyone, and I just want to be a good example, and I really respect everyone, my opponent. I just have so much respect for him and the fans, and I have so much respect. It's like, I'm so tired of that shit. I love people like Mike Perry, like Colby Covington, who break the mold and embrace just being a heel. And I don't think Perry is necessarily doing the whole heel thing as much as Covington. I think Covington is more going out of his way to be an asshole as often as he can. Like, he spoiled Star Wars for a bunch of people, I guess, on Twitter. The guy is actively trying to get as many people to hate him as possible. I think Mike Perry, it's more of a, you're just seeing the, just, I think he's a little more genuine. I live in Florida, and I know a lot of people like Mike Perry. You might not believe that that's how Mike Perry actually acts and behaves in real life. But to those people, I would say you've never been to Florida, because Florida is full of people like Mike Perry. It's why we have the reputation of being full of crazy assholes. Mike Perry is a crazy asshole, and I love him for it. He shows no respect to anything or anyone and just goes out there fist blazing. That said, I like the guy. I'll be rooting for him, but stylistically, this might not be the best matchup for him. Santiago Ponzinibbio is what some would call a beast. He's on a 5-fight winning streak, just knocked out Gunnar Nelson. The fight he lost before that was to Lorenz Larkin, and Lorenz Larkin can beat anyone, including the guy on the main event of this card, Robbie Lawler. So, Santiago, I don't think this is a easy fight for either guy. I think the line is about where it should be, with Ponzinibbio being a moderate favorite at minus 170. Perry's a live dog, but I agree that Ponzinibbio will probably win here. An even closer line, Misha Sirkunov and Glover Teixeira. I like this fight a lot. Sirkunov was favored over Volkan Ozdemir before getting demolished. Will he be able to get back in the win column? Going to be tough against Glover Teixeira, but I like the up-and-comer Sirkunov. Like you said, he's not necessarily a kid, but he kind of feels like one because he hasn't been around the UFC that long. And almost like Francis Ngannou, it's a breath of fresh air to see these new guys like Volkan and Misha at 205 in a division where the old guard has been around for a long time. You don't typically get that many new fighters. So, I'll go to Vegas and take Misha. That brings us to, I guess, the last topic of the night before we send this out to the interweb, Rafael Dos Anjos against Robbie Lawler. The line is about as close as it can get. Dos Anjos right now on 5 Dimes, minus 120. Lawler's plus 110. On other cards, it's split, and Robbie's the slight favorite. Both guys who throw a lot of heat. You got Rafael Dos Anjos, the former lightweight champion, moving up to 170. You have Robbie Lawler, the former welterweight champion, looking to get back the belt that once was his. I'll let you break this one down first. What are you thinking as far as who you're leaning and how the styles might match up on Saturday night in Winnipeg?
Oh, man. Well, this is a very intriguing style matchup here, Jake. I mean, at least for me, I'm looking at this one, really trying to break it down, and I just don't know how this one's going to go. I mean, Robbie Lawler, he typically puts on that pressure. And I want to say we've seen a few fights where Rafael Dos Anjos, you know, he does not respond super well to that pressure, but he has just looked good and really, at least for me, surpassed expectations for him at 170 pounds. You know, and he himself has shown durability as of late, both at 155 and 170 pounds, that I'm in awe of. And, you know, I think, hey, he could go full 25 minutes with Robbie Lawler, quite possibly. You know, he's super well-versed everywhere. He's always been, you know, everyone has always said how strong Rafael Dos Anjos is. So him going up to 170 pounds, who knows, this could be, you know, Robert Whittaker situation. Maybe he's even better moving up. I mean, this is certainly going to be a great litmus test for that. Man, and Robbie Lawler, you know, he's one of the craftiest veterans of the game. Both these guys have been around for so long. I mean, well over a decade for each of these guys in the UFC, not just MMA. And it's going to be a hell of a fight. I think, I don't know, as I try and, you know, do the P-Money mental computer here and evaluate all the scenarios, I think that Rafael Dos Anjos, it keeps popping up. Like, the upset meter just keeps going off. Like, I think, you know, there might be a little speed advantage there. Pardon me. Maybe able to get in and out.
Dan from Oregon's going to be pissed at you for that, dude. He got on one of us for chewing last time.
I know, now it's throat clearing.
We're fucked now, dude.
Know. I know, shit.
Shout out to Dan in Oregon. What up?
Dan, Big Dan, keeping us on our toes. Appreciate that. Need someone to keep us legit.
That's right.
you know, it's just so hard. I smoke so much. It's impossible for me not to cough. I apologize. Try to do it when I'm muted up. But, you know, when the takes get too hot, you know, sometimes things happen. But I think Rafael Dos Anjos, man, I think he's going to come in and I think he's going to take this one just a little more tactful. And I think he's got the power to get it done. You know, man, I almost wanted to switch and go with Lawler, but no, I think Rafael is going to get it done. Or I'm sorry, Rafael. I think he's just going to be able to piece Lawler up there. I don't think he's going to get the sub. I think it'll probably be a 25-minute decision. But I think Dos Anjos will be able to take him the full five and get a W.
Yeah. I am biased here. I'm more a fan of Robbie Lawler than I am Rafael Dos Anjos. And this is such a difficult fight to pick stylistically, because normally you like can say, all right, can either guy dictate over the other, whether the fight is standing or on the ground? Where do both guys want the fight to be? I would assume in this fight, both guys want to keep the fight standing. I don't think we'll see it go to the ground. That's kind of the first thing you think of when you're breaking down a fight stylistically. You know, where does each guy want the fight to take place? And does either guy have the tools to dictate keeping it there? You know, can a striker keep the fight standing? Can a grappler take his opponent down? In this case, I think they're both really good strikers, and they will both probably prefer to keep it on the feet. But then once I get there, it's just a head scratcher, because both of these guys have excellent footwork. Both of these guys not only have excellent technique in their hands, but you've had knockouts from both guys that are just wallops. I mean, you see guys go down. One thing I think about, will Rafael Dos Anjos, will he have any trouble kind of bringing that power up a weight class? You know, we've seen with so many fighters who move up, their power isn't as damning against heavier guys as it was at 55? Are his heavy punches that really get through, are they going to be able to land with the same force on welterweight that they did on a lightweight? And another reason why I'm kind of leaning toward Robbie, I just think about his chin and the fact that, man, he's a really difficult guy to injure, to hurt. And Rafael Dos Anjos, not that he's easy, but I just, the more I think about it, the more I'm kind of leaning toward Robbie. And I think I'm going to take our boy Robbie, longtime Lawler here. And man, it'll, you know, whoever wins, I'm looking at, let me pull up, which is an awesome thing. I know the listeners love when I pull up websites as I'm in the middle of talking. The welterweight rankings right now, you got Woodley is the champ, Wonder Boy first. Wonder Boy isn't going to get a shot in a while because he just got two. Then the next three down after Wonder Boy, Lawler, Covington, Dos Anjos. So either, I mean, next in line for Woodley seems like it's either going to be Covington or the winner of Lawler, Dos Anjos. I was hearing whispers about a season of Tough between Woodley and Covington, which would be hilarious. I would love that. I mean, kind of like I was talking about before, the UFC doesn't have enough heels, and Covington's the best heel the UFC has at the moment. So I'd be stoked for that. But yeah, the winner of this fight for sure is in a good spot. But I got long time Lawler here, and I think that's all we got as far as topics and questions, comments, all of the tweets. Of course, you can find us at the MMA Podcast. You can find our boy Pat at Sweet Pappy Jones. Uncle Pat, you got anything left for us?
You know, I think that puts a bow on it rather nicely. I'm just about ready to kick back and get into these fights, my man.
Hell yeah, buddy. I'm looking forward to them, too. And, yeah, we should be on the Twitters during the fights, too. So follow us. Tweet us. I like going back and forth. Tell us how smart you think we are. Tell us how fucking stupid you think we are. Either way, it'll probably elicit some sort of reaction out of us. So, yeah, follow us. Thank you so much for listening to the 215th edition of the MMA Podcast. We will be back for the 216th episode of the MMA Podcast either this coming week or next week or both. We got that fun UFC 219 card coming up at the end of the year between Cyborg and Holm, and then we're stepping into 2018 in MMA. We started this show off, damn, back in 2012. I'm proud to see it keep going, and we intend to never stop this train until it's run way off the tracks. But again, thank you for listening. We appreciate the shit out of you. We love you. We'll see you next time. Enjoy the fights. Till then, we gone.